Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Beautiful day, yogis. This is Andrew Seeley, and welcome to the Yoga Revealed podcast. Today we talk with Dylan Warner, a body movement specialist, an inversion artist, and an avid international yoga teacher whose physical practice is a mere reflection of his deep internal journey of self-discovery.
I wanted to live a more harmonious life. I wanted to learn how to connect to myself, to my body, to my breath, and then in turn connect to everything else in my universe.
Be prepared to dive deep and take the leap on this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast with Dylan Warner.
So I'm stoked to have you on, Dylan.
Thank you. I'm stoked to be on.
Dope. So basically, I kind of want to go back to like when you first started yoga, like, and maybe even before that, like when you first started movement. Because I remember you saying that, you know, you did some wrestling at a time. Kind of give me like your timeline of growing up and some of the movement that you've done in the past.
So I grew up kind of in, even though I have 7 little brothers and sisters, I come from a really big family. Because I come from a divorced family, I really grew up as an only child, and so a lot of time alone by myself, which is the definition of alone, I guess. But I remember that my first, like, I had the Hulkamania Hulkster workout thing, which was this work. It was a workout poster, and it had some 3-pound plastic weights that were just like filled with concrete, and a Hulkster workout tape. And so I would sit in my room and I'd do these Hulkamania workouts at like 4 or 5 years old, you know, just this little kid. And
you're a little Hulk right there, man.
I wanted to be strong. I think very little, I always wanted to be big. And my parents both being very short, my mom's 5'2", my dad's 5'5", I didn't have much hope of ever being a tall person. But I don't think my parents ever wanted me to know that. But I was like, I wanted to be big and strong and kind of superhero-like. And when I was a kid, if you asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I'd tell you I wanted to be a hero.
Wow.
You know, I just wanted to, like, save the day. And I think that's always stuck with me, because I do have, like, a bit of a hero complex.
What do you mean by that?
A hero complex? Like, I want to be, like, in a very everyday sense, like, I want to be the one that's there for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I want to be the one that my friends and family can trust, to rely on, that if they need help out of a situation, I'm the first person that they think of, you know. I mean, that feeds my ego a bit of who I am, but it's also, like, of how I built a lot of my values of who I am also. It's just, like, you know, when I was 18, I joined the Marine Corps. You know, I was a paramedic for 8 years. I was a firefighter for 4 years. After the Marine Corps, I was a youth pastor. I've always been in, like, this kind of just wanting to help people and lift them up. So that was, like, my hero complex. I think when I was littler, I more wanted a cape and, like, fly around and stuff. I didn't quite understand it, but it was somewhere all along the same lines.
What do you think was at the core of that wanting to help people, or wanting to be kind of like the supportive person that people could trust and always count on?
I had a really hard childhood. And like I said, even though I was the oldest, I grew up alone. And I grew up with a very abusive stepmother who would, she was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And she would abuse me physically, like from like 5 until I was probably big enough to fight back. Which was a long time because I didn't get very big very fast. And just a dad that was always gone. You know, I don't even know. He wasn't really in the picture. He was around, but not really. Like, he sold cars. So he'd wake up at 10 or 11 in the afternoon and then go to work and come back at midnight. And I didn't really ever see him. He just kind of worked all the time. And then when he was home, he would just be in his room smoking weed all day. It was kind of his thing.
Wow.
So I grew up with no physical contact, no love, no anything from anybody. And it reflected who I was as a person outside of that, because I was just like, I needed attention. And so I would just ask for it in all the wrong ways, and I'd fight everybody, and I was not a cool kid. I was very much like the loser dork that no one ever wanted to hang out with. And that was kind of like really until high school, like even through junior high, just like I was the ostracized kid that no one liked.
Did you play any sports, or were you just kind of in your own zone doing your own thing?
So like I remember like always wanting to do sports. I always wanted to like play baseball or soccer or anything else like that, and I always asked to, and I was never had any support in that, so I didn't. But I was able to get into like club wrestling and stuff in junior high. I was like 10, 11 years old, so I started wrestling a little bit there, and it was good for me because I really was like a little kid. When I was a freshman in high school, I was 5'2" and I weighed 88 pounds.
Wow.
So, I mean, just really small. And so wrestling was good because there's weight classes and stuff. And for my size, I was just like, I was really strong. Like junior high set the district record for pull-ups and push-ups and sit-ups. Anything that was body weight, I didn't weigh anything, so I just kill that. And wrestling, I did really good. I mean, once I got into it, I really succeeded. And then my sophomore year, I put on some weight. I think I graduated high school at like 125. I wrestled 125 my senior year. When I graduated from the Marine Corps, when I got out of boot camp in the Marine Corps, I got out at 145.
Wow. So you definitely put on some weight in the Marine Corps.
I started wrestling for the All-Marine team. I got up to 170. I was benching 325. I was a vegetarian then, too.
Really?
Yeah. When I was at my most weight is when I was a vegetarian.
What were you eating mostly? Like, what was your diet consisting of?
A lot of eggs and protein and a lot of cabbage, a lot of broccoli.
Basic greens,
a lot of spinach, a lot of, I don't know, I just ate all the time.
And then you worked out a lot.
And then
obviously.
I worked out.
Your regimen was probably pretty rigorous.
Yeah, I mean, my normal routine when I was wrestling for the All-Marine team was I would ride my bike about 10 miles to on-base, because I lived off-base. Then I'd work out in the gym, power lift for like 2 hours, then I'd wrestle for 2 hours, sometimes swim or run after that, and then ride my bike home. And then after that, I'd get in my car and I'd drive to Redlands, where I was kind of from, and I would do two martial arts classes back-to-back. And that put me about 7-8 at night, and then I'd drive back and get up the next morning. So that was every day. I was wrestling and doing martial arts.
And would you say that the Marines helped you become very disciplined in your regimen?
Yeah, I think I was so competitive with myself, and I always have been. I always wanted to be, like, the best at everything I've ever done. I've always had this drive to be the best. I know that's very, like, ego-driven, but it's not necessarily, like, the sense of where you think, like, the best is in, like, better than everyone else. Though in wrestling, like, I wanted to be better than everyone else. And, you know, I pretty much went undefeated for 2 years until I'd get to the levels where I'd have people that were first and second in the Olympics were the only ones that could beat me.
Wow.
You know? And I probably would have continued doing wrestling and stuff, except for my last year I got sent to Iraq. And after that, I was just like, I'm done with the Marine Corps. I'm done wrestling. I just want to go back and try to continue on with my life in a normal way.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about that? About that circumstance of
the Marine Corps
having to go into full action and be called to serve your country?
Yeah, okay, so I joined the Marine Corps in 99, right after I graduated high school. I had some recruiter tell me that I could jump out of helicopters and be a hero. I was like, that sounds fun. Clinton was the president at the time. I didn't have any idea of going to war. I didn't, you know, for some reason, like, going to war and joining the Marines, those two just, like, they didn't go together.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think I'd join the Marine Corps and then go to war, like, because my whole life there was really no wars that went on or anything like that. It wasn't that type of world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was more just, like, go in the Marine Corps and do a bunch of fun boy stuff, and I wanted to be a firefighter, and I ended up being a firefighter in the Marine Corps. I did crash fire rescue, though most of the time I wasn't at my job, I was on the wrestling team. So most of my time in the Marine Corps I spent on the wrestling team. I only went off the wrestling team when they pulled me and deployed me to Iraq, which I actually got deployed as a sergeant with a ton of people underneath me, even though I hadn't even been in my job. But because the way that you get promoted is based on how well you can shoot a gun, how long you've been in your job, and your physical fitness test, you know. And you also get a score of, like, how well you do your job while I was wrestling, and I was one of the top in the world. And so I got top marks, you know.
Wow.
Much higher, like, than you would get in your normal job. I was really good with a rifle, with an M16, and my physical fitness score was maxed out, 300. So I got promoted really fast. I mean, I was a corporal in an E4 corporal in under 2 years. I was a sergeant in under 2.5 years. I picked up E5. Which people, you know, takes them normally like 6 or 7 years to pick up that rank.
Wow.
So I went over to Iraq at 21 years old as a kid with all these people underneath me. And, I mean, like anything, it was an experience.
Yeah.
You know, I was one of the first people in Iraq. I went in January 2003. I was involved in an invasion in March of 2003. I was in Iraq for a total of 30 days during the war, and then when it was over, you know, that was when mission accomplished and all that, we thought we were done, came back, was in Kuwait for a couple more months, and then got separated and got out of the Marine Corps, you know. So it was like I was there during the very start, the invasion, the shock and awe. I know you're a little bit younger, so you
mm-hmm.
don't really remember that so much, but the whole thing is we went over there doing an air, ground, like, they called it shock and awe, basically. They're just going to blow the shit out of them with a bunch of bombs and stuff. I think that's a horrible way to go in anything. But I was in that. I remember I spent 30 days in modified Mach 4, which is your chemical warfare gear. So basically, I was in the desert at 130 degrees wearing full chemical suit with rubber booties, charcoal pants, charcoal top, and a gas mask.
Wow.
You know, running into the bomb. It was an interesting time, if anything. But
did it teach you a lot?
I mean, it definitely, like anything, Khalil Gibran, or Khalil Gibran, I don't know how to say his name right, wrote The Prophet. He says that sorrow carves out our being so that there's room for joy to fill it. So, if anything, it taught me what the low was, right? And many times in my life, I've learned what bottom feels like,
yeah.
Right? And I feel like the deeper that you could come to bottom, the more that you could realize how perfect and how wonderful and how beautiful life is and joy is and how happy you can be. It's to understand yin, you have to understand yang, you know, and to fully understand one, you have to know the depths of the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if anything, it taught me what that depth was, right? And so by being in such a awful experience, I really was able to grow a lot as a person to understand, you know, both sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like anything, through time you tend to forget. Like every time you know, it's like we constantly have to be reminded of how bad things can get,
mm-hmm.
for us to appreciate how good things are. And even if you go through the worst situation in the world, I feel like, you know, karma, life, whatever, God, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
will again show us like how bad things could be so that we could really appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate the beauty of things as
yeah.
well. Yeah. So when were you introduced to yoga?
So I was first introduced to yoga in 2001 when I was still in the Marine Corps. And I was wrestling, and then I was also getting heavy into martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And part of my martial arts training, one day a week, we did yoga. But it was yoga in the sense that very much just asana, just calisthenics. Like, I think asana without the rest of yoga is calisthenics, right?
Totally.
And a lot of the stuff that I do might look like calisthenics, but because I understand what yoga is, I know that it's not calisthenics, and I know that it's yoga. But regardless of that, it was called yoga, and we'd be in boat pose, and my sensei, you know, 65, 70 years old, just badass, would walk around, just like, ho, 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 and then heel kick you in the stomach, like, be like, and then just heel kick you. And that was my introduction to yoga. And
while you're in boat pose.
While I was in boat pose, he would come by and heel kick us.
Do you ever teach like that?
just, you know, if I don't think you're doing it right, you know. But, I mean, we did some warriors and cobra pose, and I was like, but there was no Sanskrit, there was no philosophy or anything like that. It was very much...
Just basic yoga.
Just basic. Asana. Basic asana. Which I don't even know if I can consider asana yoga without the rest, but that was my first introduction to it. And I liked it because, you know, flexibility helped me with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But then it wasn't until, like, years later, about 9 years later, before I turned 30, I was 29, a couple months before, I wanted to go out and like meet girls, and I thought yoga would be a good place. And I don't. So we all come to the mat for a different reason, you know. Some people come to the mat for to get flexible. Some people to get healthy, to get strong, to get centered. But what I've found in my experience and in my students is whatever brings us to the mat isn't what keeps us there, right? Because I don't really feel like anybody that starts yoga understands what yoga is,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's not like, I haven't really met anybody that they're like, I started yoga because I wanted to become enlightened. You know, like, I wanted to live a more harmonious life. I wanted to learn how to connect to myself, to my body, to my breath, and then in turn connect to everything else in my universe. I've never heard that from anybody that said, why did you come to yoga? It was to connect to the universe.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, my mind wasn't any better than that. Was just like, there's a lot of really cute girls in yoga, and I think this
would
be...
Was it a friend who brought you?
Yeah, it was a friend. It was a female friend that I wasn't necessarily interested in, but she's like, come to this class, and I went and I took it. It was a power yoga class. It was hot. I was in the back corner. I had no idea what I was doing, but I was strong. It was level 2-3, and I could do handstands. So I was like, dude, this is really fun. This is really cool. I didn't understand any of the yoga part, but I liked the physical part of it, and I was like, this is something that I could get into and do. And I, because I was new at it, I felt really intimidated, and all the girls were like so good at it, you know, so I didn't really talk to them, to any girls. Though I did end up meeting my fiance days later, you
really?
Know, in that class. Yeah.
Yeah. Ashley was in that class.
Ashley was in that class.
Wow.
And, that's the only girl I ever met in yoga.
Wow.
So,
that's crazy.
So I did get in it to meet girls. I met a girl, and she's been with me my entire yoga career. But after my first day, like my perspective on what yoga was and what I wanted to do with yoga totally changed. No time did I ever think it'd be my life, or did I ever want to teach it, or, you know, just...
So tell me when that shift happened between actually going to yoga and then maybe embodying it into your lifestyle, or was it a teacher who drew you to it, or was it the feeling that you got from it? What, like, was the thing that clicked with you that allowed you to get beyond just the asana practice and more so into the eight limbs?
Right. So I was a firefighter paramedic at the time. I had basically just made it off my probation year. So I'd been a firefighter for like 1 year. And at that time, it was like I started taking another teacher who was really good and kind of opened up the doors to more of the asana, but also more of what's behind it and stuff. So I started to develop a connection. And I mean, that's all yoga is. This is just a connection. And because of all the stuff that I'd seen in my life, and then being a paramedic and dealing with life and death every day, and someone that really enjoys like the philosophy, you know, to maintain balance in my life, like, it really just spoke to me. I just wanted to practice it, though. I never wanted to teach it.
Mm-hmm.
Ashley, she had been doing yoga for about a year longer than I had. Super flexible and stuff, but she was a hairstylist and she wanted to teach, and I had my career. I was making really good money. I owned a home. I was like set, you know, but I really wanted to support her, and with my job I was able to get time off. So I took a month off, and we went to a training. Just didn't know anything about who taught it, where it was. Basically, we chose it because it was affordable, and it was short, right?
Two good things. You're
two
like,
good
okay,
things.
I was like,
and it was close. It was in Baja, Mexico, so it was close. It was affordable, and it was a 16-day training, you know,
wow.
for the 200 hours, just a total immersion program. So it's like, sweet, this is it. We'll go. We signed up. We took it. Like, I just wanted to support her. We went there, and that's when I met Shane Christopher Perkins,
okay.
who... This is my teacher, and he's, you know, a couple years older than me. I think he's like around 38. Just the most amazing person I ever met, and his asana practice is amazing. You know, he could do, he's as strong as me and as flexible as Ashley, you know, it's like,
yeah,
just, and the most humble, down to earth person. And when he looks at you, he looks at you,
mm-hmm.
you know, when he hugs you, he loves you. And it's just, everything is about who you are, and he cares, and it's unconditional, and he's on another level than I've ever met anybody else in my life. You know, he's just that, and him and I, like, I had a total, like, man crush on him, right? Just because, like, I respected him so much, and who he was as a person, and how he conducted himself, and how he spoke, and how he interacted, and it was just like, he had something that I couldn't put a finger on that wasn't tangible, but it was very real. And we hit it off, and, you know, we had great talks and stuff over my 16-day training. And basically, like, he told, like, him and this, the other teacher that was teaching us, she was leaving. It was his girlfriend at the time, and she's moving to New York to go teach with Dharma Mitra. But she said basically to me, like, I could have her spot when she leaves. Like, that's how she felt about me as a teacher, right?
Wow.
Which blew me away. And Christopher saw the same thing in me too. And, you know, like, this was, the training was not asana based. Right, most people think I come from a very asana-based background based on my practice, but
mm-hmm.
I did a vision quest in my training.
Wow.
We fasted for 24 hours. We did transformational breathing. Majority of it was based around meditation and pranayama, the Yoga Sutras, philosophy. You know, every other day we would sit in a circle and we would talk. We would just ask. We would just, you know, hold space, and we go through, and just one question we asked, you know, didn't matter what it was, it could be something that's just like, how do you feel? And through that, it's like 2 hours almost every day or every other day, learn to break down through the layers to get past where we live, which is on the superficial level,
mm-hmm.
right? Then we would get down into basically why we live on the superficial level, is because underneath that's our vulnerable level, right?
Yeah.
And this is such a hard place, and where we try to stay out of, but then we try to go past that vulnerability to a level which is emptiness, right? This is where, like, after we get past vulnerability, we realize that it's just nothing. It's just empty shell,
mm-hmm.
right? Hollow. But then once you get past that, then you realize that it's not empty. It's actually full, right? It's like a glass, you know, if you fill a glass of water and you pour it out, all that water, and then you just have the glass and look inside there and you say that glass is empty.
It's filled with space.
It's filled with space, with air, with what we need most in life. I mean, there's something in there. And so that's like when we really go down through who we are, we find that. And it was something that, like, I'd never experienced before. And I was like, this is what yoga is.
Mm.
Right? And I found a connection to myself, and I found a connection to people and to the universe and where I fit, and it made sense. And after that, I was like, I'm teaching yoga.
You knew.
I knew. And so went back and I started teaching, you know, just 3 days a week.
Where'd you first start teaching?
Started teaching at this little studio in Redlands. You know, and I had like a class. Just did it on the side while I was still being a firefighter, and I started to really develop a strong personal practice, and was just in love with yoga. I would leave my house at 1 or noon to drive down to LA to get to a class by 4 to take a yoga class, and then drive back, you know, like I was all into it. And just,
whose class did you used to go to?
I used to take Brock at Yogis Anonymous.
Oh, wow. back in the day.
Back in the day. So Ashley and I would go down. Even if you go to Yogis Anonymous online and go to like the old rock classes, you'll see Ashley and I. Like if you go back, like way back. So, yeah, and then after that, 6 months after Ashley and I got invited to Bali to teach a teacher training with Christopher and another one of the trainers.
So that was like a huge honor, I'm sure.
Yeah, because this was like my teacher, and then he's like, he had so much respect. He's like, will you come and teach a teacher training? I just graduated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But he saw something that was in me, and he's, you know, probably taught 100 teacher trainings. You know, it's, Yandara was one of the first teacher trainings to be recognized. I think it was the first teacher training to be recognized by Yoga Alliance.
Wow. So what is it called?
Yandara. Yeah.
Nice.
So they're based in Baja. They have trainings in Bali and in Hawaii. So they invited us, and we taught our first teacher training. You know, yoga teachers for 6 months teaching, and it was pretty amazing. After that training, I went back and I was still a firefighter and stuff. I ended up getting laid off from the fire department. So
you were doing pretty well, though.
I was doing really well. As soon as I got laid off, I ended up going back to Mexico and teaching another teacher training.
Okay. So how did you feel teaching these teacher trainings? I mean, like, being that...
Well, at that time, I had been teaching for, like, a year longer.
Cool.
Right, so I felt a lot better. I felt a lot more confident. I think it went a lot better. Though I felt like even the first teacher trainings, because a lot of what I taught was just yoga. I mean, and
it was what you knew.
It's what I knew, and my background was in anatomy, and I had 12 years of body movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
I understood how the body moves, how the body works. I mean, that's why I could do what I could do with such short amount of time. It's like, yeah, I've been practicing yoga for 4.5 years, but I've been practicing body movement since I was 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so, even though I wasn't doing handstands and arm balances, I knew what core stability versus core strength was. I knew what straight arm scapular strength was. I knew how to move the hips and all that. So I had all these concepts, and I understood what a pose could be, like how you could take a person deeper into a pose. Not what a pose could look like, but like what a pose could, how a pose could affect a person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I understood that already. I didn't need to do yoga for 10 years to understand that. I already did. So teaching people was easy. And then I had my guru, my mentor, alongside me for my first teacher training. And, you know, I learned so much more from that. So when I got laid off and I taught another teacher training, it was natural. It felt good. My students were very grateful, and they loved the balance that I brought, you know, compared to like the other teachers, which, like I said, is a very spiritual, you know, and I brought a lot more of the asana stuff, because that's where I learned to find my spirituality. You know, that's where
mm-hmm.
I find my meditation.
Through the asana.
Through the asana.
To gain that connection, and then therefore your spirituality blossomed.
Right. So it's not just the meditation, the pranayama, like, but learning how to connect the three. So, yeah. And then I got hired back on. I got back 2 months in Mexico teaching teacher training, so I taught a couple of them.
It was
got
like
back.
The rite of passage.
I got back, and I got my job offered back to me, and it was like, cool, but because I was laid off through our MOUs, I was placed back on probation. I'd already been a firefighter for 4 years.
Wow.
And so now they put me on a 6-month probation, like I'm a brand new probie. And I was with a captain who, for whatever reason, didn't like me. you know. But I mean, like, you worked together 4 years. It was a small department. He didn't like the fact that I was a yogi. I was very much into doing my own thing, which is not the fire department way at all. Like, I like to be in my room and read. Or instead of working out and lifting weights, I like to do a yoga practice, you know. He didn't like that about me. And so at the day before my 6 month probation was over, he, actually he wasn't even there. That I show up basically thinking that I am done with my probation now. The three chiefs were there. They sat me down and said that they're letting me go because I'm not a good fit for the department.
Wow.
And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, how my paramedic skills aren't good? No, your paramedic skills are fine. Like, am I not a good firefighter? No, you're fine as a firefighter. We just don't feel that you, you know, your captain gave you not passing scores for your probation. He says that you just, you're not a fit for this department. I'm like, what are you talking? I've been here for 4 years,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I got, the only reason why I'm in this is because of, and it's just like, well,
wow.
Sorry. So I got in my car, cried on the way home. You know, this is something that, like, I went to college for, you know, medic school, 10 years to, like, become a firefighter. It's like, that was what I wanted to do. Even though a year before that, I decided that it wasn't a good fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to be a firefighter. So I think they were 100% right saying I wasn't a good fit for the department, you know? But I didn't want them to tell me that.
Yeah.
I wanted to be on my own terms, but it wasn't my path. And so I was like, okay, I have a house, I have a mortgage, I don't have any other skills. You know, I'm a paramedic and a firefighter. That's all I ever did.
You had to figure out exactly what your next step was.
Yeah, I had no idea. So I was like, okay, unemployment. Thanks, Obama. I'll just go on unemployment. So, and I had savings. So for basically like 6 months, 9 months, I did nothing.
Wow.
It was like, okay.
Were you still teaching?
I was taught yoga 3 days a week, $25 a class, $75 a week.
Wow.
You know, and I tried to stuff, but that was nothing. And actually, I think I might have had to stop teaching because I didn't want it to mess up my unemployment, right?
Any income.
Right, so my unemployment was a lot more than $75 a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, maybe I'll do graphic design because I've been doing graphic design since I was in high school and web design stuff. So I was like, okay, well, there's some programs. So I started doing like online tutorial stuff, learning all these like other programs and stuff that I didn't really know, and then trying to do graphic design work on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like Ashley and I had been talking about moving down to LA. And we're just like, yeah, screw it, let's do it. Let's move to LA and be yoga teachers, and I'll teach graphic design on the side, you know, and we'll try to make it work. And the first place I got hired on was at like a CrossFit gym, and then at this other like Kundalini studio, and I was doing graphic design. It was just like teaching a million classes to nobody, you know, empty rooms, and we were just really struggling. And then Instagram started to take off, and Equinox offered me a job based on my Instagram. And then yoga got a job at the Yoga Loft, which I'd always wanted to work at because all like the teachers I respected worked there. And Equinox, all the teachers I respected worked there.
Okay.
And so,
can you name some of those teachers?
At Yoga Loft or
yeah.
Like,
both places.
Well, like Brock, who I'd been coming down to take. Brock and Krista Cahill, like I've been coming down to take, they both taught there. Angela Kukan taught there. I'm like, these are all like awesome yoga teachers that I really, you know, I want to take them. And then Equinox, you know, you had Bry and Dice, Brent, like all these awesome teachers. And I was like, I want to, you know, that was like the you don't teach for Yoga Works, you teach for Equinox, you know,
mm-hmm.
that's like the. So I'm like, I want to teach for them. And I just, these jobs are offered. And then it was like, okay, now I'm teaching a million classes a week.
How'd you balance that?
Oh, just, I lost it in my own personal practice, just didn't go as well. I mean, I still really try to keep it up, but it's hard. That's one of the struggles of being a yoga teacher, is learning how to teach, have a personal practice, and then still go and take classes. Yeah, because, like, you think of the three jewels of the Buddha. You know, the first one's the Buddha. That's, like, that's the enlightenment, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our highest potential. The next one's the Dharma, right? That's the teachings of everything to reach it, the highest potential. And the last one's the Sangha, which is, that's the community, right? And that's where inspiration comes from. And without that jewel, without that community, your practice becomes stagnant. Without inspiration, you become stagnant, right? So that's such an important part of my practice, is to take other teachers and to be inspired. That way I can continue to inspire, right?
Nice.
And you know, yoga, it all comes down to the same thing. It all comes down to community. It all comes down to connection. So, yeah. And then I started learning balance. I, like, said, screw it. I quit half my classes. Said, I don't need to teach all these classes. As soon as I did that, I picked up a bunch of privates. It's like, okay, sweet. You know? And then I was like, I have too many of these. I'm going to get rid of some of these and some more of these. And as soon as I did that, then I started booking workshops all over the world, you know, and then
it's like kind of like
it was
letting,
like,
go of the things that didn't serve you, and then
right.
For letting go of those things that didn't serve you, or allowing that space to fulfill the things that
right.
did.
And that was just every time I did, you know, every time I took this leap of faith of whatever, I've been rewarded, and now it's like, okay, well, do I need to let go of more, you know? And it's always like a scary thing, but kind of, it's, I mean, I've been down in LA for like 1 year, and I can't even believe, like, how my career as a yoga teacher, I actually have a career as a yoga teacher, where I thought I'm gonna move to LA and just struggle and live in a little shitty place, and you know.
Yeah, you have a gorgeous place, and it seems like things are going pretty well, traveling, and
yeah,
life is enjoyable. You have a new fiance, and
yeah.
It's beautiful.
So, I don't know, I really believe if you open it up to the universe and you put it out there, that it'll happen. You know, if you're willing, if you're ready for it, it happens.
Can you give me some insight as to some of your meditative practice, or how your practice has blossomed and into more of the limbs of yoga, and maybe describe some of those limbs, because I remember you saying that you are having a Pratyahara class tomorrow.
Okay, so I'm gonna kind of take your question, I'm gonna tweak it a little bit more into like what I want to talk about.
Okay, that works.
No, but it's so, because it comes down to a lot of like when people see a practice like ours,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is handstands and arm balances, and it's showy and it's flashy, and they don't, from an outside perspective, that's what it looks like. And when you take pictures of that and stuff, that's all you see. When I first started doing handstands, it was great. It was like, awesome, I could do a handstand, this is fun. But it was really, why I do handstands is because of what handstands have taught me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The first part that whenever you come into a handstand is there's a fear base. There's a fear element. And maybe for some people that's really high, and other people it's really low. I've tried to recreate that fear element by taking my handstands to some pretty crazy places, just so that I could still experience that same thing. Not that I'm trying to be dangerous or crazy or anything like that, but it's part of the practice. It's part of understanding yourself. A handstand teaches you more about yourself than most poses. It helps you understand who you are. To trust yourself, it requires balance. You have to find your breath, stillness, meditation, concentration. So my teacher Christopher told me. He's like, you know, find Tadasana. Because I remember we had a class, this was when I was new, my teacher training, you know, how Tadasana is mountain pose,
mm-hmm.
right? Solid, it doesn't move. I mean, it is, like, if you take every pose and you treat it like it's Tadasana, right?
You're
every
like
pose
very,
is...
very strong,
right.
grounded.
And so it's my journey started becoming, how can I make handstand Tadasana? And how can I find my meditation in handstand? And that's really like where my inversion practice started to come, because I think I had an addiction to being present, which is kind of funny.
What does that mean?
So I don't know where it is, because I feel like it's the opposite for most people, that we try to not be present, right? We try to be, do everything that we can to distract ourselves from what's really going on. But I always wanted to be like present, like what's here now. And I got big into skydiving, you know? So that
yeah.
was like one of those things, like I got my skydiving license. I was jumping all the time. I was like, this is, you know, you can really be present when you're hurling yourself out of a plane, you know, like, but even something like that, after a while, it becomes routine. It becomes mundane. It becomes,
unless you're like Jeb Corliss and you get like, you know,
I have a picture of me and Jeb. Like,
are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah. I saw him
and
I was like, oh my God, you know, he's like in his whole black wind suit, but still, I mean, even him, you know, he might at times lose that. And even in handstand, I do the same thing. But it was like I was taking myself to an extreme place to find such the thing that didn't need to be extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And so the practice, the yoga practice, like when I come into handstands, and it's really every pose, but handstand is like it amplifies that to really help find the present, your breath. And to come into a handstand and close your eyes and put your head down and feel the body and notice your proprioceptors feeding back and the whole, and just to feel everything and the blood coming to your head, and it's just, it changes your meditation and it changes your practice. There's a reason why yogis meditated in headstand,
mm-hmm.
right? And I don't like being on my head. I like being on my hands. You know?
You don't headstand at all?
I do, but not that much.
No? Do you feel like a lot of pressure, or would it even...
It's more like I feel limitation in headstand.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just of the variance of...
I feel like I could hold... I don't know. I feel like I could hold my meditation longer in a handstand. And I've got to the point where I could hold a handstand with my head down and my eyes closed for over 5 minutes.
Wow.
Breathing. You know, so it's like, that's really become a journey there. And that, and it's through all arm balances. It's just like, when you come into an arm balance or something, you're really coming into the present moment, because it requires so much concentration, so much strength, flexibility, balance, breath. All of it is needed up front, right, for you to accomplish that pose. And then if it gets too easy, there's another level that you could take it, and there's always another level that you could keep bringing it up to keep you in that same place. You know, it's the evolution of your practice. And so to be able to take something like such a strong asana and to connect it to the pranayama, to the breathing, allows you to enter into the pratyahara, which is the inward drawing of the senses. And then you can come into your concentration and your meditation, and you move towards enlightenment. And so it's really just a linear based of, you know, starting with trying to find balance and who you are through your own life and how you conduct yourself as a person, to discovering what's below the neck, you know, and finding your body. And then it's about taking your body and connecting it back to the mind, and using the breath to become that bridge. And then with that breath and the mind and the body connected, then you start to bring everything inward to find where the seed is, right? And then once you find that seed, then you can start to nourish it and watch it grow. And that's how we come to enlightenment. You know, that's where the meditation comes from. So it's a handstand could just be a handstand, or it could be, you know, a doorway to a whole world of understanding. And what you see in a picture is so just two-dimensional. You know, and you can never understand really the journey behind that until you're in it. And that's where my obsession with handstands and arm balances came from. And that's why I practice them so much, because it's not that the handstand that I'm obsessed with. It's what's behind the handstand that I can't stop.
Just take me to your definition of yoga and why you feel it's so profound that you've actually devoted your life towards the practice of yoga.
I think we look too much into like defining what yoga is, or maybe not all of us, because I can't speak for all of us, but I think a lot of people is like, yoga is this, yoga is that. And I really feel like yoga is connection. I mean, yoga means union. That's obvious, you know,
mm-hmm.
You look at Wikipedia and find that, but yoga is a connection to yourself and how you connect to the universe, right? I'm you, you're me, you know,
mm-hmm.
We're the same. And when you start to realize that we're all the same, then things like hate and prejudice and judgment and insecurities and all that stuff start to go away. And so most people that get into exercise, they stick with it for a month, 2 months, a year, 10 years, right? Because they're going for just the physical body, right?
Yeah.
That's
just achieve one thing.
Just achieve one thing. Let's get skinnier. Right, yeah. Let's get stronger. Let's get more flexible. Whatever it is, they're going for that, but they're neglecting the whole, which is the connectivity, right? To
mm-hmm.
everything else. Like, so when yoga is all of that, and when you start to practice being the best possible you and learning how to connect into that, and really we're all going for, I mean, the yoga path is to samadhi, which is enlightenment, you know. And I think everyone is going for that. So when you, or at least happiness, everyone wants to be happy. If you take it beyond happiness, it's free from suffering, right? That's the next step past happiness, which people don't really seem to get to. But if you could get to a point where you're free from suffering, you know, and you see what that journey is, of course you want to be on it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's attainable?
I mean, I believe that there's people that have obtained it, and you know, there's always like do it or die trying, right? So that's kind of like how I approach it. Like, do I ever think I'll be there? You know, I don't know, but I'm gonna try my best. Like, I still have all my demons and stuff that I have to deal with, you know, to get past it. Yoga helps me, you know.
Certainly.
So there's no reason to stop.
So if you could give one nugget of advice to our yogis listening, to people all over the world who've tuned into the Yoga Journey podcast today, what would that nugget of advice be?
Just, it's get on your mat every day. Doesn't matter what you do once you get there, but make the effort to at least put 2 feet on there.
Well, the Yoga Journey podcast community is better for this interview and for your time, and we're really thankful for your insight.
Thank you. This is great.
For more inspiration from Dylan Warner, check out his website, dylanwarneryoga.com. You can also check him out on Instagram for quick tutorials and awesome inspiration. Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and drop us a 5-star review if you truly appreciate the interviews we do. You can find us on SoundCloud, YouTube, and Instagram too. Until next time, live light, shine bright. Namaste, yogis.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.